Welcome to The Offer, the no sugar added approach to the talent triangle with an unfiltered view of employers, candidates, and recruiters. I am your host, Michael Glinter.
The Offer, unfiltered.
Before we get started, just a reminder, if you need any type of services, questions, you are looking to do a sponsorship on my show, or you have needs as far as resumes or anything as far as the staffing industry, please email me at michael@michaelglinter.com. Again, that is michael@michaelglinter.com, so we can connect. You can also check me out on social media. And please, as a reminder, don't forget, you can subscribe to this podcast to get weekly updates, as well as please pass along information to your friends and family. Today I have a special guest. I met Jen back in 2004 when she started working for the company that I worked for 21 years, and we've kept in touch. She's a staffing specialist, a talent acquisition manager, and somebody who's very well in tune to the recruiting and staffing world. And she is here to help talk a little bit about the COVID-19 trends of people just taking a job to take a job and not really being serious about it. So I'd like to welcome to the show, Jen.
Hey, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. I'm one of those, you remember the commercials with the, everyone says happy hump day. All I think of every time it's Wednesday, I think of the commercial with the camel running through the office. Oh, I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
That is so funny. You brought up a topic the other day. And, you know, for my listeners, Jen and I have known each other for years. And the other day we were chatting and she brought up something that I haven't really approached or talked about on my show, which I think is extraordinarily important. And I think it's important not just for us to help companies and recruiters understand ways to, you know, look past the smokescreen, but I also think it's important for candidates to understand why. Because I do think oftentimes they don't think it's that big of a deal. Like, I don't think they think that by them doing that, it's what I don't think they realize what the cost is. So what we're talking about, and then I'll let Jen kind of pick in, is when an applicant applies for a job just because he needs a job. Like, in the back of his mind, he knows he's not going to like it. In the back of his mind, he knows that he's not going to stay. But he needs a paycheck. So rather than being truthful to himself and to the people that he's, you know, approaching, he takes the route of, I'm just going to sell the fact that they should hire me and then ditch them after 6 months when I find something that I want to do. So my first question to you, Jen, is how does that affect the company? Like, you know, candidate A, you know, convinces you that you should hire him. And deep down inside, he knows he's not staying. And then 6 months later, he quits. Says, oh, you know, I found something in my industry. Nice to meet you. Thanks a lot. How does that affect the company?
Yeah. I think it affects it in a few ways. So the company that I work with, we work with clients. And other companies may have customers. And I think very right out of the gate, if you're working with clients, you're building a relationship with them. Your goal is to create this long-term relationship where this client stays with the company. And if the client is constantly having sales reps or account managers or consultants leave their account, they begin to question the stability of the company they're working with or as a customer who they're buying from. And they question it gives this external persona that something may be wrong with the company. And so it impacts the company's relationship. It impacts the reputation. It impacts revenue. But also, too, it impacts culture and coworkers. And, you know, if you have a lot of candidates that are turning over, it doesn't create, you don't get to really build those great relationships and collaborative. I mean, in today's market, we just have so many teams that are collaborative and supportive and encouraging, and you just tear that apart if you're only going to be there for just 6 months. You really can't build that kind of really great culture that everyone talks about. That's what they want. They want a team that's collaborative and supportive and that's going to drive them to succeed. And if you come in with that, you're not being authentic to the company, to yourself, to your teammates. And then also too, I think it impacts the candidates themselves, if I can go there. When they ask me about company, but as a recruiter, when I see a lot of movement on a resume that's not well explained, it, after a while, you can do it a couple times, but after a while, that, you know, employers tend to look at your resume and make a very quick assumption that you're a job hopper, you're not going to stay, and you're never going to get considered. So it hurts their reputation as a professional.
Well, the other thing too is, listen, it's a small world. Mm-hmm. People talk. And I have had many of times, not just once, many of times where candidates have screwed a company. They go work somewhere else, and either someone from the company comes there as a higher up, and now they're your boss. Talk about a true story. Girl screws a company, walks off the job after 9 months because she decided she wanted to go work for this other company. Didn't even give them notice. Unbeknownst to her, 3 months later, one of the VPs that she worked with at the company she walked out on got hired as a VP at her company. And she ended up getting quote unquote laid off after like 3 or 4 months. Now, we don't know the reason, real cause. And of course, they're never going to admit that. But I got to tell you, it circles back. Whether you think it's going to or not, it circles back. Karma. That's what we call it. It's called karma for a reason. Yeah. What about the cost?
Yeah. Oh, don't get me started on training costs. I live in talent acquisition, so learning and development is part of our company. And it's a big cost in terms of having to, because there's always a ramp up period for every candidate. You know, you get into a new job, everyone talks about that kind of that 90-day, you know, probationary period, you know, or whether you're a consultant or not. And you're learning the company's product, you're learning their tools, you're learning how to do the sales pitch, and the company's investing in you. They're investing you as a team player, as a, you know, someone that's going to be an ambassador for their brand. And when they have that kind of churn and attrition, it just, you're constantly spending more. It's not just even the training dollars. You have talent acquisition that's now going to go back, and we've got to backfill your position. And if it's a really unique, difficult position, we can spend weeks, and you're talking, you know, sometimes months trying to fill a particular position. And the cost to the team trying to backfill that, the cost to the team that's got to now train the new person, it's pretty steep. No, I was going to say, I want to go back to you say it all comes around and it's karma. But I think, you know, we started talking about COVID. That's where we started with this. And as you said that, it hit me. I've experienced this recently in the months with COVID. It's tenfold, I think, of how it comes around and being a small world, because there's so many companies that are laying off now. So we got hit really hard. And so the number of people on the market is ballooned up because of COVID. And so now your chances of crossing paths with someone that you've burned a bridge with, it's going to be exponential at this point. I mean, we had a company, had several companies here in Nashville, and one of our directors, he had worked with this company as an account executive and then moved over with us. And over the last couple of years has grown from an account executive to a director. Well, lo and behold, that company did a massive layoff. And you sure know that he's looking at going, oh, wait, I know that one. Oh, she's amazing. She's great. So when it's a small world and you've done well, it plays in your favor, because he was a great reference for them. And we ended up hiring 3 high sales managers from his old team onto our team. But there was definitely account executives that was like, ooh, no, that person left us. And then they tried to come back, or they did this. I mean, it's going to haunt you even more so, I think, in COVID.
Today's conversation is actually going to be helpful for everybody, because there are candidates out there that are part of the masses trying to get a job, and they're battling it out with candidates that really don't care what they get. And so they want to know how they beat the punch to the people that are just lazy. And then you've got the companies that are saying, okay, how do we dig through amount of crap to figure out who's really sincerely interested? And the good news is I think that most of my listeners are serious. They're not going to be those people that are just looking for a gig. And so let's talk a little bit about when you're interviewing a candidate, what tells you a candidate's just not interested?
If we have to chase you, we're not going to do that for long. You know, we call it going dark, right? You're unresponsive to emails. You know, we get, you know, a couple thousand applications a week, right? So if we have one person that's not going to, it's going to take a week or few days, you know, to respond back to our emails, we're going to lose interest very quickly. So it's a lack of, it shows a lack of motivation, a lack of interest, a lack, and they're just not being assertive, you know.
Let me flip that around really quick though. Because I know, so there's an argument that's going to come up from applicants saying, well, works both ways. She's on the other foot. How do you get back to your applicants? Or do you? How do you get back to the 1,000 people that apply?
Right. I think it's a varying level of, we respond to all of our applications. Sometimes it's a automated response after we've reviewed. We review all applications. That's a requirement I have for my team. So maybe I'm one of the crazy ones, but I believe everyone deserves some level of response. As a candidate, nothing, I get it. Nothing's worse than not getting a response. So that's just one thing with our team. But I mean, you know, we're not a Fortune 100 company that has, you know, 20,000 employees. So,
right.
So haven't been in the luxury to do that.
And I think all companies have different philosophies. Some companies have automated receipt messages basically saying, you know, we received your application. Your application will be reviewed with all the other applications that we receive in this position. And if there's an interest, we'll contact you. The problem is that candidates don't like the fact that if there's an interest, we'll contact you. They want you to contact them either way. What applicants don't realize though is that, you know, there's a large pool of applicants that if you respond back to them or send them a notification saying they're not being considered further, they're argumentative and defensive and fight. And so you'll learn quickly that there's a lot of companies that don't want to do that because they don't want to get into the whole back and forth with applicants. They don't want to have to deal with, you know, an applicant calling up the hiring manager, the HR person. I'm sure you've gotten those calls where I got a email saying that I was rejected. I don't get it. I'm perfect for this job. So there is a level of understanding, but you're right. I think ghosting is a real big problem. I think that if you're going to apply for a job, whether or not you're sincerely interested or not, once you apply, you need to do the due diligence if they try to contact you to say, listen, after further considering the opportunity, reading the job over again, I just decided not to pursue it because you don't know. Maybe 5 years from now, you will want to pursue the company. And I don't know about you, but when I get candidates that blow me off, I red flag them so that I know this guy blew me off the last time. I'm not going to contact him this time. What else?
Oh, exactly. So, we definitely track that in our ATS system, our applicant tracking system. That gets documented there.
So you have a guy on the phone, and what are some of the hard-nosed, like, you know, real key indicator questions for you where you think, is this guy really, really excited about this position? Like, what would be questions that you think would be really hot buttons for you?
So I guess when you're saying questions, comments or phrases that they say that would be kind of a red flag or a deal breaker for us. I think if you don't know the name of our company, taken 5 minutes to look at our website. And I get it. I can already hear the argument of some candidates on this. You reached out to me. You sent me a message on LinkedIn. You said you wanted to talk to me. Yep. We absolutely did. We came after you because we thought you had a really nice background and we wanted to learn about you. This is a two-way street. It's just a courtesy to at least look up the website and see what the name of our company is and where we're located.
Know what the company does. I tell people all the time, Wikipedia is your friend. You know, when a company engages you, you go on Wikipedia, you type in the company name, and the great thing about Wikipedia is like the first paragraph tells you about the company. So you know the bare bones minimum, that you need to know to sound smart.
Yeah.
What about knowing your brands? I love this one. You go to interview with a company and they ask you, well, what's your favorite brand of ours? And the candidate says it's the competitor's brand. if you're gonna answer that question, you better damn well know what brands they represent.
Yeah, so if I send you to an interview with Pepsi, you darn well better not say your favorite brand's Coke. I had that happen. While I was with working at the same company as you.
Oh yeah.
I gotta tell you, I've never heard Pepsi so mad, and sadly enough, someone did it to Coca-Cola too. And they're like, what the heck?
Well, I will tell you, I actually worked for Coca-Cola. This is just a side story. I worked for Coca-Cola, and I will tell you, Pepsi, they require all their employees or anybody that carries a Pepsi product. Like if you go into a Pepsi restaurant and you ask for a Coke, they require their vendors to say, no, I'm sorry, we don't serve Coke, we serve Pepsi. Because they feel, because it's such an easy, listen, we all know it, it's a branding thing. When you go into a restaurant and you ask for a soda, you don't say, can I have a soda? You ask for a Coke. Pepsi hates that. And so that's what they do to counter it. But it's the same thing, you're right. Know your brands, know who you're talking to. If you don't know, then say you don't know, or say you don't have a favorite brand, or say that you haven't dug that deeper. Be honest. I think the biggest thing that I get frustrated with is when applicants try to lie their way through the question, or they say they give you answers that you know they're bull crap. They're bullshitting you. I can say it.
Yes.
And you know that
is a great point.
And you're like, you wish they would just say, listen, I don't know the answer. But instead, they sit there and give you this long-winded response where you know it's not true. And you want to call them out on it. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. But at the end of the day, you want to call them out on it because you know that they're not being honest. The number one rule of thumb when interviewing is be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't know an answer, don't try to figure it out on the fly. Just be honest and say you don't know the answer, you know? What about when you're interviewing candidates, do you ask them like, why would you want to come here? Like, what's your motivation to come work for our company?
Yeah, I think we take an approach where we first, it kind of goes to what you're talking about, being honest, right? And then also too, it's being authentic to who you are. So I think I would challenge applicants before they apply to a job, just stop for a second and say, is this really what I want? And if it's not, then move along. You know, you don't need to. So it's being authentic and true to yourself in addition to being honest. It all kind of comes together. So we tend to ask the candidates, what are you looking for? Because we want to learn about, really, before we try and pigeonhole them into what we're looking for, we want to know really what does that person want? And is this a good lineup? So I think the question is first, know what you want in your career path and the role you want. And then we kind of follow that up. If we think it's kind of that we've got a potential match here, then we're going to say, great, what is it about our company that excites you? Or what have you heard about our company? And that's the first question. Those that don't know who we are, they're kind of dead in the water. And then I can tell you very quickly who we've gotten long-winded questions. And I'm like, we're a marketing and advertising firm. You're talking about something completely different. I could tell you don't know what we do. So they kind of skirt around really the true answer, because either one, they haven't taken time to really answer the first question of what do they want personally and what they want to achieve and being authentic to themselves. If you can't answer that, then you can't answer why you would be excited to go to a company.
And you know, that question is somewhat of a loaded question. Like, you know, how many times have you heard, well, I'm looking to just continue my career for the next couple of years until I get my PhD and then we go teach at school. Or I'm going through my doctoral, I'm going to get my doctor, my MD degree so I can become a doctor. But right now I'm just doing customer service. You know, so I get it, right? That question can be a loaded question though. I mean, sometimes sharing too much isn't necessarily the best way to get a job. Because you know, listen, do you know how many times I've heard someone say they're going to pursue their PhD and then 10 years later, they're still pursuing it? You know, I can't even tell you how many times. Or somebody who says that they eventually want to become a veterinarian and then, you know, 20 years later, they're still in sales selling consumer goods. You know, be true to yourself and what you want now and what you want to get out of your career. And that's what you should be articulating to the person that you're talking to so that they can understand whether or not their immediate, short, and middle long-term needs are, can be fulfilled through the things that you're looking for. You made the example the other day of someone that says, I want to be a manager in a year. Well, we can't offer that. That's a big red flag, but your recruiter didn't catch it. Yeah, I agree with you. It's a huge red flag. Somebody says they want to be a manager in a year and you know, well, you're not going to be a manager for at least 5 years. Well, guess what? That's a problem. You're not going to have that here. And as a candidate, don't be upset if a company calls you out on it. I mean, they're just trying to help guide you to make that decision. But now we go back to this whole COVID-19 thing, right? There are people, Jen, that have been directors and VPs that are unemployed. And while taking a manager's job, of course, is not ideal, they have to work. And they may not get a director or VP job for another 5 years because of the market. How do you counter that? I mean, how do you feel about that? Like, can you put yourself in their shoes and understand why they would want to take a step back? And how do you decide if you're comfortable enough to do that?
Yeah, I think that's a really individual question based on the individual, you know, based on where they want to be in their career. And I think the recruiters first just need to have a conversation and be open-minded, going in key and listen. I think they need to listen to the candidate. And as they kind of walk through this discussion, and some people, it's really clear as you're talking that they may use some condescending tone or a word or be a little snarky on the phone. And then you kind of go, okay, well, clearly you were director, but you can tell that they're almost looking down their nose at it, maybe a sales manager opportunity. You can, or they make a grunt or whatnot. If you listen, you're going to pick those up. And that's someone that probably I'm not going to pursue into next stages because they've already got a chip on their shoulder, right? So they're kind of in that bucket and out. Then they have the others that really have adapted this. I'm going to lead where I'm at, succeed where I'm at, and everything's an opportunity. And I'm going to dig in and I'm going to make it the best and roll up my sleeve and do it. And if they can say, you know, I've talked to directors and they're like, oh man, I've missed being an active sales rep or I've missed doing the one-on-one coaching. I would love to be able to get into that. And that's going to, you can tell that they're going to be passionate about it. They're going to be motivated by something at a role that's a little bit below where they were before. And if you can hear that passion and that motivation and what excites them, that's someone that I would talk to despite what their title was before, and understand that they're not just looking for a job. They're looking for, we look at two identities when we interview candidates. There's what we call someone that's looking for a rich career and someone that's looking for a wealthy career. The wealthy career is someone that's, you know, motivated by, they care about their OTE, what is the percentage of their company. They're very driven by what can they make now and how fast can they make that money. And that would probably be the first person that's looking down their nose at having to take a lower level title. You can kind of hear that. And some of them are great, they make great sales. It's not right or wrong. But the person that's going to step from a VP to a director or a director to a manager is someone that's going to be in that camp of a rich career. This is someone that's going to dig in, make an investment in themselves, make an investment in a team, is really motivated by the type of work they're doing, the impact that they can have, made them want to be with a smaller team because they can drive initiatives. And when you hear some of these coming out in conversations, you kind of go, oh, okay, they're really going to be okay with this and we need to talk with them. And that's someone that we would love to take in as a manager and flag them for a director as soon as we can get them back up there. So it's an individual question. Sorry, long-winded answer, but I think it's really speaks to how that individual answers about why they're willing to take a step down.
One of my favorite questions when talking to applicants is, what did you not like about your last job? What about your last job would you have changed or would you not want to have in the next job? Because, you know, we all know that a lot of people are being downsized from jobs right now. We get that. You know, it's part of COVID. It's, you know, whatever. But deep down inside, everybody has that mindset that, well, now that I'm unemployed, let me think back at all the things I didn't like about my job so that I know that on my next move, I don't fall into that same issue, right? How do you feel about that question? What do you do if somebody starts talking about what they didn't like in their last job and you realize, okay, they're going to probably run into the same stuff here?
I love that question. You know, little tip to candidates, never answer that question talking about your previous manager, nor begin to give office quotes. Not a good thing. Yes, your life experience. I asked that guy a question and he spent 15 minutes talking about a manager and the fights they had, and then started to quote Michael from, not you, Michael, but Michael from The Office.
Oh my God.
This is a unique, I kid you not, saying that's what she said on an interview. You're not getting another call. So be careful how you answer that question, but also be truthful. I think when I ask that question, I look for, yes, is there something that they're not going to get? Like if they tell me, I hate cold calling, I can't stand it, it makes my stomach sick, I break out in sweats, I hated it. Well, you're interviewing for an account executive position and cold calling is part of the job. So I ask about that. I'm like, this is where we're at. And that's a concern of mine. You shared that you're not, this is something that really creates anxiety for you. Is this something you really want to do? And you kind of get back to that, what are you looking for? So yeah. I think that question opens up, I have a very conversational style in interviewing, because I think you learn more about each other as you learn more about the employer, learn more about the candidate when you just talk through it. And sometimes it's like, yeah, I didn't like it, but you know, I did it and this, here's how, what I did. And you can actually put a positive spin on it. It wasn't my favorite task, but here's how I worked through it and here's how I succeeded at it. And then it gives you an opportunity to share your mindset of how you approach things and how you problem solve. So I think that question is a great opportunity to learn on the employer side, but it's also a great opportunity for the candidate to even share how they overcome adversity on something they don't like, or show their grit or determination or perseverance, which there's positions that require those things.
And a couple of different angles too. If someone asks you, what did you not like about your last job? You could also spin it and say, well, what I would really be looking for in my next job would be a place where I don't have to make calls all day, but maybe be more engaged with my, you know, coworkers, be more engaged with customers outside of phone calls. Mm-hmm. So you can almost spin it to a positive, because one of the things people always say is you're never supposed to say negative things about your last company. Well, that's also about the environment as well. You can spin those things to create a positive response to something, even though it's secretly telling the person what that you didn't like, you're telling them what you're looking for as a positive way of handling that question. So I think that's very important. I think it's to be true to yourself. I also think it's situational in the sense that, let's say you didn't like making a lot of phone calls in your last job because all the calls that you were making were to people that did not request phone calls. Like let's say it was a list of just random numbers. But then there's also environments where you can go in and you have what's called lead calls, where all the phone calls you're making are to people that have requested calls from people to make to them. Mm-hmm. And so when you're explaining what you didn't like, and let's say you don't want to put the whole thing in one box that I don't like making random phone calls, what you should say is, you know, one of the things I had to do in my last job was make phone calls all day to people that did not want to hear from us. They never requested to hear from us. They didn't give us their information. It was basically, we bought a list and we called people. I would rather not do something like that again. Well, that doesn't necessarily eliminate you from all call center type environments. It just eliminates you, or says to the interviewer, I don't want to be that guy that calls people that doesn't know who we are, and they're wanting to know how I got their number. Make sense?
Yeah, no, exactly. But I love that you're putting a spin on it, because just by a candidate finding a way to put a positive spin on that answer tells me a lot about them. It tells me about their attitude and their approach. There's so many things that a recruiter is going to read. They don't necessarily, it's not even just about sometimes what you're saying. It's about how you say it or what you're not saying. And I love that idea of putting that positive spin on it. And I think you can also, you can jump, I'm not going to do that list, but here's what I did love. When I got a candidate or a client on the phone, a prospective client, I loved doing the pitch, or I loved this, and this is what I really enjoyed. And my conversion rates were X percent on my close rates. There's a way to get a KPI right in there, and by you're tooting your own horn, but you're speaking in examples and facts.
That's
so it comes across realistic and humble.
That is a great example. I love it. I love the fact that you're bringing in metrics. And you know, that's funny because they say, if you haven't heard this already, metrics mean everything, period. I tell people all the time, you know, if your resume doesn't have metrics on it, then you've got an issue. Because no, everybody sees you as just any other candidate. They don't see the value in what you bring to the table. And so when you can bring up metrics, even when it's not necessarily being asked of you in an interview, I mean, you're scoring points. Because at the end of the day, you're giving them those finite numbers. So here's another trick. This is a trick that I love using. So you're getting on the phone with an applicant. So say an applicant applies. I'm going to use a different angle on this one. You're not headhunting somebody. An applicant has actually applied for your job. What about the question of, you applied for this job, what skills do you think you have that would work well for this position? And then you let them talk. I love that question because do you know how many times they give you skills that have nothing to do with the role? Isn't that a great weeding out tool?
It is. We asked a question about, you know, the skill set and is specific to sales. The question was, what skill set sets you up to overcome diversity within sales? And this is a sales position. And it's interesting. These are candidates that have experience. And this is a second stage. You know, those type of questions are a second stage in our interview process. And they don't answer anything from business. They give us an answer of, we've had everything from losing weight to by building some kind of add-on to a home. What is this skill? What does this have to do with you building rapport with the clients? No, like make sure what skills you answer is relevant to business. I mean, be smart with your examples and bring back, you know, be, and that's just in the self-awareness of just who the company is, what the role is, and what have you learned along your way that's going to set you up for success and set you apart? And again, going back to examples, you can, there's so many of these questions that you can answer with an example. You can say, my greatest strength is building connections with stakeholders. You know, we had a situation, and you kind of flow right into the example. And, you know, we had a situation, this is what it was. This is the problem that we had overcome. Here's how we did it. And here's the result. And that's, some people recognize that as the star way to answer a question, which is great. And I think, you know, even just answering skills, just always keeping that in mind, you're selling yourself on that call.
Absolutely. Well, in-person interviews, or in some cases, Zoom interviews, from an interviewer's perspective, what do you see as indications that the person lacks interest in the role? Like what about what you see?
I think this is with COVID.
I love that you're laughing. I love you're already laughing about this question. Because I know I'm like 50, but go ahead.
Oh my goodness. I'm just going to speak to the video because, you know, I think everyone has at this point seen the meme when we first got into COVID and where the lady got herself stuck as a potato on a Zoom call. But if you do not take the time, you're on camera. We can not only see you, we can see what's behind you. So if you don't take the time to just a second to look at the camera angle, because we know before you go live onto a Zoom call, onto BlueJeans, onto Google Hangouts, you can see what the camera's seeing, right?
And that includes reflections, by the way.
Oh, yeah. So probably the laundry room with your dirty laundry sitting on top of your dryer and washer, probably not a great place to do an interview. Again, real life story. So So it's, I think it's COVID. I think you need to be almost more intentional because we're using videos so much that you do. And it shows if you don't take the time to be aware of what's around you, if you don't just start there, immediately you're telling the interviewer you are not detail oriented. So if you're interviewing for a detail oriented position, you just put yourself behind. You don't care enough about them, or it shows a lack of interest because you're not putting your best foot forward. And then if you, and if you do make the poor, you know, decision to do that Zoom in an area that's really messy, it's like, oh my gosh, this person's very disorganized. We need someone that's going to be on point and that's going to be able to follow up. They can't even keep the room behind them clean for an interview. Like, but done. And that's before you even open up your mouth. So,
well, and, so get rid of, and I also think it's to do with getting rid of the distractions too, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're in a, now there's a flip side to this. I had this come up the other day. A woman was in her phone, was videos zooming with another lady for a job. And she was home with her child. She told her child, stay in the other room, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, listen, we don't have control of our kids sometimes. Sometimes our kids decide to do whatever. You know, don't panic. I mean, generally speaking, most interviewers understand. And they're going to be empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
So her daughter came into the room. This because my client called me about this. She said, get the F out, please. On the Zoom call to her daughter. And so my client was like, Mike, listen, I'm a mother. I get it, right? You know, I get it. But holy crap. Like, does she realize that, you know, she just said the F word to her daughter on the phone while I was watching? Like,
oh my God.
If she's going to do that to her daughter, what the hell is she going to do to somebody who's not her daughter? It was probably one of the most embarrassing Zoom situations that I've confronted, because then I have to go back, of course, and be that person that says, well, do you remember when your daughter walked in the room and you said, get the F out? How do you feel that made the interviewer feel? It's like, come on, people, common sense. I get the fact that we're in very tough situations. I get the fact that it's not normal. But remember, even though it's Zoom, even though you're sitting in your house, doesn't mean you should be relaxed. I tell people all the time, dress up like you're going to an interview. But like people ask me, what should I wear? What would you wear if you went to an interview? That's what you should wear.
Right.
Why are you even asking that question? I mean, but what about when what about when you're talking with them? You're engaged with the person, you're having this interview, you're going back and forth. What are things that turn you off when you're doing a Zoom call with somebody?
Probably the same. A lot of the same things that would turn you off on a face to face. But I'm going to put the pause on that. I wanted the woman that spoke that way to her daughter. She missed an excellent opportunity to learn something very vital about that interviewer. You know, when you look for interviews and the people talk about culture and you want someone that's understanding. And I'm a mother of three. Things happen. Kids get sick, crazy. I'm a workaholic, but if the school calls, my hands are tied. I got to go, right? And I look for employers. I'm going to work very hard for the employer, but I need to know that they're going to be understanding of that and not hold that against me. Mm-hmm. And she missed an opportunity because, one, it's an opportunity to show the employer how you're going to respond to something that's unexpected, because unexpected things happen in the workplace. Do you handle it with grace and professionalism, or do you kind of lose your stuff? So she lost an opportunity to show that to the client, but she also missed an opportunity to see the client's response. And I say that, and I feel like I'm going to toot my horn here. And I don't mean to toot my horn. I'm just using the example. I hired a recruiter, a senior corporate recruiter recently, and that happened to us. She was like, we were talking, we're on a Zoom call, Zoom call. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the baby starts crying. And she's like, oh my gosh, I planned this time during nap time. I'm so sorry. And I'm like, it's fine. It's fine. It happens. And so we kind of laughed and had this conversation. And later she said, you know what? Your response and understanding, I got to see that you actually really are living out that you truly are flexible and understanding. Like, she's like, you didn't flinch when this kid started screaming in the background. And she got to see how I would treat her as a boss. So it was a missed opportunity when the unexpected happens for so many reasons.
Well, and
sorry, rabbit trail there.
No, but I like what you just said, though. It works both ways. It absolutely mm-hmm. works both ways. As a candidate, you have to think about how it looks to the interviewer, but also as the hiring manager, just remember the way you handle those situations also is reflective of you and the company. Like if you're not understanding and empathetic to people's situations, especially mm-hmm. in the middle of this, then I got news for you.
Yeah.
People are going to then put that label on you, not only you, but also the organization that you work for. And I guarantee you, I promise mm-hmm. you, your boss doesn't want the company to have that label. And as an interviewer, you know, think about the fact that how you respond to people having those issues can also be reflective to how they feel about you as a potential company to work for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's such a small thing. I had no idea in that moment how impactful it was for her. It was really small to say, no problem. Just go ahead, we can pick this back up. So it was just interesting. But to answer your question about what are some of the things that are turn off on Zoom, you know, I think you're absolutely spot on when you say dress as you would in person. Wearing your pajamas, wearing your spaghetti strap shirts, because it's the summer, I get it, but you're still in an interview and I can still see you. So, and it kind of looks like a bathing suit. But also beyond dress, and I think it's also, it's eye contact. Are you listening to me? Am I listening? It's the same things it's going to be face-to-face. If someone's not looking at me when I'm speaking to them, it's a very awkward conversation because they're looking down. Don't stare me down for 30 minutes during our interview because you're going to kind of creep the interviewer out. So you're allowed to blink and you're allowed to look away. I think I used to tell candidates, I'm like, bring a notepad and jot some notes down, and it breaks eye contact in a natural way, right? You're not writing a novel. You're writing like two words. So then you can come back and answer a question.
Just don't look away when you're answering a question.
Yeah. I had someone look down completely and I was like, are they reading off of something? They never could look. I couldn't catch their eye contact. And it became like, that became my focus of the interview, was trying to catch their eyes.
Well, it also could be an indication that they're lying. There's all kinds of now in defense, because I know that someone's gonna hear this and say, wait a second, Michael, don't necessarily make assumptions. I say that mm-hmm. because I've done a podcast about people that are autistic. And for some people who are autistic, it's very difficult for them to look at people in the eyes. And so
it is. And I'm sorry, I have an autistic son.
Oh, well,
so I can speak to this. But there's a difference. So using that as an example, my son, he doesn't really look me in the eye all the time, right? We've had a lot of therapy and a lot of work to get where he's comfortable. But he's aware, so it doesn't bother me that we're not eyeball to eyeball when we're talking, but it's a physical, nonverbal, his head is straight. So he may be looking like to my ear or past me, but he's still looking up. I think when the example that I have where the person's head was literally down, like I'm looking at the top of their head in the video. They never really lifted their head watching him, he can look, so you don't have to actually, you know, he didn't have to make eye contact. He can look up and to the side, but it's just the acknowledgement that my head is up and I'm sitting up straight and I'm giving you my attention. And there's ways to show attention if you're not comfortable looking eyeball to eyeball, right? Direct eye contact. You can make kind of off to the side contact, which is what he does. And mm-hmm. and so he does, but you know, he's understanding of that. And I get it. There's a wide spectrum that's on the autism spectrum. Absolutely get it. So using my son as an example, that it's just him. That's not to speak for the autistic community. Each person is an individual, and each person has it. I get where you're coming from.
And I'm just using that as an example to interviewers that, listen, just because somebody doesn't look at you in the eye, if you notice a pattern of that, don't don't assume that they're lying or don't assume there's lack of interest. Maybe it's something else, you know? And you be respectful of that because it does happen. I was talking to, it's interesting because I was talking to a contact of mine. He was actually on my show and he works for this Fortune 100 company, won't say who, but for years he would interview people and if they didn't like look at him in the eye when they talked and they weren't affirmative when they talked, he would turn them down because he would say, well, they're not really a culture fit. And then he had two autistic children. And he's like, Michael, my whole perspective now is different. Like, I look back at the times that I rejected somebody because of things that I know my kids will do because they don't know any other way. I start to think, oh, did I turn that person down for the wrong reasons? It's a learning process. And listen, I'm not gonna say that's an excuse, and I'm certainly not gonna say that's the reason all the time. But I can tell you, as hiring people, we have to be cognizant of the fact that just because somebody doesn't respond like in a cookie cutter way or the way we think is gonna be the best way, let's not automatically like put them in a column. You know, work through that interview and see if there are things that they say that balance it out. And maybe, you know, maybe you address it in a indirect way in the future. Like maybe the next time you interview, you say, you know, I notice you don't really look at the camera when you're talking. Is that normal for you? Do you feel comfortable? You know, and then maybe they'll come out and say, well, you know, I have a slight degree of autism and I have a hard time looking at a camera. Well, that's great. I mean, as an interviewer, I want to know that because that means that it's an expectation. There's a level of understanding so that I don't want to lower your performance or criticize your performance based on something that I know is not your fault. Now we're getting into a whole other topic.
No, but I think, but there's also something called active listening. And that's something that you can tell that the person, even if they're not making eye contact directly, or if they do have an issue, there's usually like an acknowledgement, whether it's a sound or they're nodding their head, or they come back. And as you come back and answer a question, you almost repeat a little bit of what the interviewer has asked. And those are signals. Okay, you're listening to me. You may not look at me, but you're actively listening. And I think that's where, to your point, just direct eye contact doesn't always mean someone's actively listening. It's definitely, I think, it's like you said, it's just keep an open mind.
Jen, you're amazing. I think we now have another topic to talk about down the road. I guarantee you this won't be the last time you're on my show if I have anything to say about it. But obviously, we both have work to be done, and the podcast is only a 30-to-4-minute podcast. So I'm gonna have to figure out how I'm going to cut this down, which I'm still not sure I'm going to do. But I really appreciate you coming on. I think we've given perspectives for a lot of different angles and a lot of different people. And I think now people have a lot to chew on how they approach interviews, how they can better prepare, and how companies can better analyze and understand whether or not somebody really truly has an interest, which I think is very important these days.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. But thank you for having me on the podcast. It's always great to talk to you. I love the way your mind works. You have such interesting questions and thoughtful, and I really appreciate that.
You're amazing. Well, I look forward. I'm going to put, just so everybody knows, I'm going to put information on Jen's company, as well as Jen, on my podcast notes, so that if you love Jen and you're like, oh my God, I would love to work for her. Well, great. She works for a company. She's had a talent acquisition. You'll have all the ways of getting a hold of her, and I would encourage you to. She's an amazing person. You know, at the end of the day, if you decide that you're looking for opportunities and you want to reach out, you'll have all the different ways you can contact her.
Thank you, Michael. You're very kind.
You have a wonderful. I appreciate it. You have a wonderful day, and you should be getting. You have a wonderful rest of your week, and I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Michael. Talk to you later.
All right, bye. Please remember to subscribe to my podcast. Also, please feel free to share, like, send, tag your friends. Let them have the opportunity to listen and understand and get a better viewpoint from the people that we talk to. Also, please don't forget, if you have any questions, you can email me at any time. And I hope you guys had a great day.